Hello, and welcome to the Systematic Understanding of Everything, an Exalted podcast. This show is a collaborative effort between members of The Story Told, Bonus Experience, and Mage the Podcast. We're going to break down the basics of Exalted, from its rules to its setting. I'm Chaz, Exalted writer and fan.
And I'm Monica, Exalted 3rd Edition Supplement developer and the lead mechanical developer for Exalted Essence.
I'm Terry, producer for the show, and I know nothing about the game, which is a claim that is growing progressively less accurate as this series continues.
This is Episode 7, Gasp of Dead Gods.
Today we're going to break down who are the Abyssal Exalted. Terry, take it away.
Who grants the Abyssals their power and why?
Well, Abyssals are where we start to step away from the familiar narrative of they were made by the gods as weapons for the Divine Rebellion, because Abyssals are new in creation. We have to get a little deeper into the meta plot for some of this as well. So, let's go back to the beginning. When the Exalted killed the souls of some of the Primordials, those souls weren't annihilated. Instead, they hover on the edge of oblivion, casting a metaphysical shadow cosmologically beneath creation, which became the underworld where souls can cling to existence. These are the Neverborn. I can't recall if we named them when we talked about the death curses of the Primordials creating the Great Curse, but these guys are where that comes from as well.
The Neverborn are hanging out at the edge of the void, deep in the labyrinth, which is the bad part of the underworld. They hang out down there, just seething with resentment and watching creation for their chance to get revenge. And they saw that moment during the usurpation. Just like mortals can leave behind ghosts, so can the Exalted, but their ghosts are supercharged from their powerful essence. As an aside, that's a big part of why the Dragonblood have built tombs for the murdered Solars that still gather creation and offer great opportunities for storytelling. Everyone loves a good dungeon crawl, or a good heist, like a tomb heist. Get some Indiana Jones shit up in there. That's great. That's what they're perfect for. But among the slain soulers were some ghosts so bent on vengeance that the Neverborn approached them and offered a pact. They would grant the solar ghosts some of their power, and the ghosts would do their bidding, which is largely destroy creation. These ghosts are the Death Lords. We've mentioned one of them before, which is the Mask of Winners, but he's only one of 13.
Original creation seemingly had no place for the dead to go, except for a bunch didn't want to die, and that created this kind of existential lint trap that has been collecting stuff.
Prior to the Primordials getting killed, and I think 3rd edition might move away from this a little bit, but here's the explanation so far. The cycle of reincarnation worked without a problem, and the fact that the Exalted killed something that could not die created the existential lint trap.
Oh, that's super cool. Okay. And when a solar dies, their ghost no longer has their spark of exaltation?
Right. That gets kicked back up to heaven.
Oh, man. So that's got to, like, super suck for them.
But their ghost is still supercharged from its association with that spark. Mm. Not as powerful as one of the Exalted, but more powerful than regular ghost of Joe Mortal.
Yeah, you get a super beefy soul from being Exalted.
your soul is swole. You have a swole soul. A swole soul society. That's the secret name of the Abyssals.
The Death Lords took power in the underworld and eventually hatched their plot to destroy creation using the contagion. We've talked about it before. It killed 90%-ish of creation's population, but burned itself out. It did flood the underworld with new ghosts, however, giving the Death Lords plenty of new material to work with. Overall, the mission to destroy creation didn't work out. Centuries go by, and the Death Lords were approached by emissaries from Malphes, the demon prison realm, and they basically went to the Death Lords and said, "Hey, have we got a deal for you?" Previously talked about the Solar Exaltations being locked away after the usurpation in the Jade Prison. And basically, these agents of Malphes told the Death Lords where to find the Jade Prison, how to break it open, and how to capture the souls. Death Lords tried, but only caught half of those souls, and had to hand 50 of them to the emissaries of Malphes as kind of payment for the information. That was part of the deal. So the souls that they kept, they exposed to the Neverborn and infused them with the energies of Oblivion, which turned them into exalted shards that could create the Abyssals.
What was keeping the agents of Malphes out of creation?
the terms of their surrender at the end of the Primordial War, in which Malpheus himself is turned inside out and then becomes a realm and is yeeted into the nothing and is banished and never heard from ever again.
There's a lot of yeeted Primordials in this game. Okay, so they knew where it was, but they couldn't come back to the creation. The Death Lords theoretically could send agents out into it with less difficulty and said, hey, in exchange for this info, you need to give us some souls. They found some souls. Some turned into one type of bad guy and bunch turned into another. So how do new abyssals come about then?
Well, mortals die and in that moment are offered a chance to become an abyssal, usually with an offer of revenge or power. If they accept, they give up their name and become abyssals. The selection is controlled by the Death Lords, who look for a variety of traits, but since they're all mad ghosts millennia old, the criteria aren't exactly clear.
In previous editions, this was very much a choosing yourself over the safety of the world. It is opting into power to avoid dying and accepting the devil's bargain that you'll have to doom the world you were born in exchange for becoming a supercharged demigod superhero. From discussions so far, 3E is probably going to lean away from that a little bit. Part of that is because it very much paints abyssals as villains. The choice to, like, choose yourself over the good of the world is a pretty villainous choice. And we're trying this time around to, like, not really have any one faction be good or bad in such clear-cut states.
Interesting. I actually never got the you had to pick yourself over creation as part of this. I always viewed it as kind of a false offer given to you by the Death Lords. Like, we'll help you do this one thing, but in turn you have to work for us. And so while it is a deal chosen freely, it's not one that the potential future abyssal has full knowledge about the real cost of what they're doing.
So how many abyssals are there, or how in terms of total number do they compare to the other exalts?
By default, there's about 100. If you're increasing the overall numbers of exalted in creation, there should still probably be fewer abyssals than solars, but they tend to concentrate in areas where the Death Lords are active. As with the Sidereals, you can kind of get around the numbers thing because the Death Lords bring them all together.
You do have to deal with the fact that the Death Lords are all over creation, which is a hard place to get around, even if you have easy access to the underworld, which, you know, abyssals do. And they're also, they're like, isn't exactly an abyssal corporate holiday party either. So if abyssals do know each other, it's probably because their Death Lords have forced them to work together. I do find that that handles my suspension of disbelief a little better, because if out of 100 in this massive place, there's only 5 of them right here, it's almost certainly because your Death Lord made you do it.
When you say Death Lords are all over creation, are they physically in it, or are they entities that are within creation, or are they in the underworld?
I mean, they're in the underworld, but I mean, like, each one of them has, like, a stronghold, and one Death Lord per direction, except the south, which has a couple more.
4 directions, 13 Death Lords. I like the idea that it goes 1, 1, 1, 10.
it's not quite that concentrated.
It's not
East
quite
also
like
has some extra Death Lords.
Death Lords, yeah.
Got it. They got some bonus ones. So how are the abyssals tied into the operation of creation?
Loosely, the abyssals are champions and vassals of the Death Lords. They lead their armies and pursue their agendas in creation.
3E, again, will probably dial back a little bit of the Abyssal's former death to everything agenda, because honestly, that's kind of boring, and doesn't necessarily make for very protagonizing stories. But their main job is enforcing, or maybe perhaps more interestingly, railing against the will of the Death Lords who rule over the underworld. Like, the Death Lords are people with dominion in this other world, and the Abyssals are called Death Knights because it's literally a vassalage, which means there's some pretty excellent space for railing against that idea, or buying totally into it and being a villain. Sometimes that's fun.
And from what I gather so far, the Death Lords are not like an essential part of the cycle of creation. They are just native to a part of it and are trying to expand that dominion.
In as much as Exalted has bad guys, Death Lords are bad guys.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, they're pretty much mostly bad. You might have an instance where a Death Lord has done something that's sort of beneficial, or at the very least not harmful to the people around them. But on the whole, they're revenge-obsessed people who are chock full of corrupt power, who have God knows what agendas, and they've bought into being the pantheon of the Divine Lint Trap, which shouldn't exist in the first place. They're not great, is what I'm saying.
Okay, and they also have kind of that we've been around forever madness that seems to get tied into things that have existed for a bunch of millennia.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what are the types or castes of the Abyssals?
Abyssal casts are basically the dark reflections of the solar cast. So you have the dusk cast, which are the equivalent of the dawn. They are warriors. And I love that you noted on here with a streak of murder most foul.
Yeah, you like that?
I did like that. I liked that a lot. You know how we said in the solar episode, like, solars are sort of the easiest place to convert your D&D character. If your D&D character is more gothy, I think you could make them an abyssal too.
Yep.
The dusk cast still plays with the whole, like, this is a fighter. They're good at killing people. And you want to, like, lead into the whole, no, I'm not just a fighter. I'm not the best fighter. I'm good at killing. That's where you go lean into dusk cast. The midnight cast is the zenith equivalent. They are dark priests, psychopomps, and cult leaders. Daybreak is the twilight equivalent. They are necro savants, mad scientists, the sort of people who are like weirdly into their undead creations or other untouchable knowledge. The daycast is the night equivalent. They tend to be assassins and spies. You know, it's funny that the day and night both are like, oh, they do the same thing. It's just the same thing, right? Like,
yeah.
The rest of them are sort of like, it's this other thing, but with a dark coat of paint. Day and light, night are like, yeah, same hat. Then, of course, you have Moonshadow, which are the eclipse equivalent, and they are master manipulators and dark masterminds and the goth version of a bureaucrat. Whatever the dark goth version of a diplomat is, it's that. An envoy to the dead. There we go. That's good.
Oh, nice. Nicely done.
Thank you.
It's also worth noting that unlike the solars whose cast marks glitter in sunlight on their forehead, the abyssal cast marks appear as dark bruises and then split open and start bleeding.
It's very silly, but also very fun in a metal kind of way. They used to be able to, like, grow vampire fangs to, like, drink blood out of mortals, and I don't know that they're going to still be able to do that, but I hope that that stays because it's so stupid and it's magnificent.
You've brought up the stupid magnificence. Like, so far, creation doesn't seem to have a lot of satire to it, but, like, are the abyssals explicitly either satirical or campy?
I wouldn't say explicitly satirical because Exalta takes itself deeply seriously, even when it's being funny. Even Exalta's jokes are delivered with, like, a perfect straight face. But campy, for sure.
Okay. My only familiarity is with the 3E core rulebook, which is done very deadpan, that you are these misunderstood knights that are fighting on behalf of death, which has its own beauty and own full ecosystem. And then from you, I just think of Batman from the Batman movie, where from the Lego movie, where it's like, darkness, no parents. So what is the basic form of their powers?
Well, they use charms like everyone else, and abyssal charms are deathly reflections of the power of the solars. They have a particularly grim, brutal, or macabre flair to a lot of them.
The essence version makes them particularly good at doing things like stealing resources. They're really good at dealing damage. And generally, they're kind of the debuff type Exalt, which I think we'll also see in their third edition iteration when we get around to it, too.
Is there something they are particularly good at compared to the other Exalt types?
Like solars, the big dice pools and supernal abilities that let them reach the heights of their power, at least in one ability at character creation, is a good starting point. They're also masters of necromancy, the same way solars are masters of sorcery. And I think they're the only exalt type that gets access to the final circle of necromancy.
Yeah, I believe you are correct.
What is the difference between sorcery and necromancy?
Necromancy is sorcery's goth punk sibling.
I mean, it's true.
But they are non-overlapping. Like, ability with sorcery does not automatically imply ability. It's not like a school of sorcery or anything like that.
Correct. They're metaphysically manipulating different energies, even if the rules expressions are similar. And again, I don't know how exactly necromancy is going to manifest in third edition. So it'll probably be similar to sorcery and will have a lot of the same kind of dark macabre flavor to it that the abyssal charms have in comparison with their solar counterparts.
In essence, you currently choose whether or not you're buying into sorcery or necromancy, and then spells basically work on the same system, and some spells have necromantic modes and vice versa. Some of these things do the same thing. How do we marry that together with a system that's basically the same, but they're metaphysically different? And we were like, oh, we'll just use modes for that.
Is there something that the abyssals are particularly bad at?
Not really. They're they're like Solars and that their thing is being good at things, right? With a focus on debuffing where Solars buff, breaking down where Solars uplift, and destroying where Solars repair. Abyssals really aren't great at doing things in a holistically positive sense, which doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be mean and horrible and awful with them, just that like their powers are negative in an entropic way.
Is there a downside of their powers?
Being touched with the void, with oblivion, abyssals suffer from resonance, where if they don't wrap themselves in images of death, and if they don't cast off their name, it warps creation around them and twists it with the energies of the underworld. And there's kind of flares of this resonance power as it builds up.
Their powers tend to be focused more on being negative in like a destructive or entropic sense. So while like a Solar might have I lay my hands on this target and their wound heals up seamlessly, and the Abyssal version might be like, I lay my hand on this target and the wound heals up painfully and messily, but it is healed. Your Solar healed version heals cleanly and swiftly and with no scar, and your Abyssal healed version is also like, no complications, it's fine, you're gonna use that arm again, but fuck if it didn't hurt, and now you have a wicked looking scar from it.
Do they suffer from the Great Curse?
In previous editions, no. Resonance took its place from a rules perspective. And from an in-world perspective, it was like, well, the Neverborn were the ones behind the Great Curse, so why would they keep their own champions cursed? But based on all the conversation around Exalted 3rd Edition, it sounds like the plan is for them to indeed keep the Great Curse in 3rd Edition. Basically because becoming an Abyssal and redeeming yourself shouldn't be a way to get out of the Great Curse. That seems silly. And so they...
One of the only things I knew going into this is that Abyssals can eat people to gain essence or can't gain essence in creation. Is that actually true?
That has been true in previous editions as well. Abyssals did not regain essence in creation, and the other Exalted did not regain essence in the underworld. That has been changed because it made going to the underworld suck, and it made being in creation as an Abyssal suck. Abyssals will probably still be able to get some benefit from drinking people's blood because they're Abyssals. Like, that seems right in line with their charm set.
I would fully expect them to retain the ability to be a vampire, but we definitely are going to move away from, you can't respire motes in the underworld, because like Chaz correctly said, it made going there suck.
Do they have political or ideological factions?
Not really. Their alignment is really with their Death Lord. Each Death Lord has their own agenda and approach and weird idiosyncrasies, so we're going to do our best to try to remember what those are.
Yeah, some of them are pretty wacky. Do you have a favorite Death Lord?
Probably I and Seven Despairs or Walker in Darkness. I like the weirder ones.
Okay, can you remind us of their shticks?
I and Seven Despairs was one of the many Southern Death Lords. I remember he's weird and creepy looking, and like his thing is like mad science, and the Walker in Darkness is near Great Fork, so he's one of the Eastern Death Lords. I will fully admit that I always thought his art was kind of hot. He was like a big Cerberus ghost dog friend. Cool pet, weirdly got a boner for this drawing.
Okay, yeah, Walker in Darkness is one of the kind of religious Death Lords who is part of the whole Cult of Oblivion thing, and who lives in a cursed domain so the living cannot come within it. He also is set up kind of as a rival to the Mask of Winters, who we've talked about before, the most active Death Lord in creation, who has taken over Thorns and is pressing his dominion outward within the East. One of my favorites is Princess Magnificent with Lips of Coral and Robes of Black Feathers. In part just because of the wildly over-the-top name, but she was driven out of her Shadowland by Great Forks, which is why Walker in Darkness is there now. And because of her failure, the Neverborn set her to serve one of the other Death Lords. So she attempts to operate beneath this other Death Lord's notice, which I always thought put her in an interesting position within the set of Death Lords that are out there.
Yeah, I have always enjoyed sort of the memeified thought of the First and Forsaken Lion, whom she is bound to, as being sort of like perpetual roommates.
That's like, appropriate.
It is sort of appropriate. And it occurs to me right now that arrangement is weirdly sexist. Yeah.
Speaking of First and Forsaken Lion, he also disobeyed the Neverborn and was also punished by having his corporeal form dissolved and is now trapped in a suit of armor at the head of a massive army that isn't allowed to do anything until the Neverborn tell him to.
you know, and I'll save opining on some of the things I didn't like about the Deathlords for later.
Okay.
But I do like the First and Forsaken Lion as being this, like, threat that's always there. And one of the things that I do like about the Deathlords is that they're this really big soap opera that's happening in very slow motion. They all hate each other. They may have hated each other in life, and they're all trying to get one over on each other really fucking slowly.
Yeah, that is true. That is very much true. The Silver Prince is the overlord of the Skullstone Archipelago. His whole shtick is that he is trying to make becoming and living in his domain appealing by letting ghosts live as the aristocracy. So if you live in Skullstone or within the dominion of Skullstone, you are judged upon death. And if you're found worthy, you become part of this eternal aristocracy. And so that's his strategy to get everyone to want to join up.
Neil likes to describe him as going for the cultural victory in this game of Civ.
Yep.
There is also the lover clad in the Raiment of Tears, who I would really like to see reworked for third edition because she was the fuck ghost.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it very, like, let's talk about how fucked up and misogynistic it is that of the, what, three named female Death Lords, one of them is the fuck ghost?
Yeah.
Yeah. Whose whole thing is, like, murder sex? Can we not? Let's not.
My take in presenting the lover clad in the Raiment of Tears has always been like the witch queen necromancer of the North. So she has this powerful dominion where she is a manipulative necromancer rather than the fuck ghost.
That's much cooler and much less problematic than the fuck ghost.
The final Death Lord that we haven't talked about is the Dowager of the Irreverent Vulgate in Unrent Vales, who is the third female Death Lord. And she is also a witch and is the Death Lord who is behind the contagion, who invented it, which is kind of neat.
She's got control over the Well of Uter, which is this bizarre, maybe trans-dimensional portal that is in her backyard that I believe she fished the contagion out of in at least one version of the story.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the thing that gets me about this, the fact that in creation, male and female Death Lords seem to be held to different standards, she merely killed 90% of creation, and that was considered a failure. Like, what the fuck did everyone else do? That to me is the double standard. Like, I respect the fuck ghost concern, but...
I mean, you're also correct that, like, the Dowager fished an extra-dimensional disease out of her portal that's in her backyard and then was like, I'm going to kill 90% of creation. And they were like, that's a failure. And the Mask of Winners is like, I'm going to ride an undead monster into a city. And everybody's like, ah, the Mask of Winners.
It's like, wow, you killed like 9 people, but everyone's right. Super scared now. Like,
yeah. So this is definitely a problem because there are supposed to be 13 Death Lords. 4 are left unnamed to do what you want with them. The gender balance is problematic, and the gender role balance is wildly problematic.
Let's make the Walker of Darkness the fuck ghost this time.
Yeah, that could be his shtick. That could be a good shtick for the Walker, actually, because he doesn't like have a thing.
There is one that we forgot who takes the
other part of the Walker's thing, which is the Bishop of the Chalcedony Thrubal, who is like the crazy death cult ghost.
Which will make you look up both the words Chalcedony and Thrubal. I didn't know what either of those two words meant until I read Exalted, and then I was like, oh, well, now I know what both of them are. It's less exciting than you think it is.
I could see gender swapping some of the Death Lords and having no change to the story, like no real impact. So there's definitely work to be done.
Yeah, I would really love to see one of them be non-binary. Like, let's give the Iron Seven Despairs they/them pronouns because they're a weird dead ghost. Come on.
Who are the adversaries of the Abyssals?
They have a lot, just like everybody else in Exalted does. First up, the Dragon-Blooded. Because the Death Lords are set against the central authorities of creation, that pits the Dragon-Blooded against the Abyssals. Additionally, Abyssals fall well within the definitions of the anathema to the Immaculate Order, so any open operations would draw the Wild Hunt, and that, again, pits the Abyssals against the Dragon-Blooded.
You can also use Solars as their default enemy. In many ways, Abyssals are the underworld dark mirror reflection to the Solars, They make great adversaries to highlight what the Abyssals have become and what they could have been.
Also, setting the Abyssals against the Deathlords is really interesting because you have this overlord and vassal relationship turning against their overlords and resisting their machinations or the machinations of the other Deathlords is a definite source of conflict for Abyssals.
Because Abyssals are to some degree anti-creation, you can just go ahead and throw Sidereals on that list too. I'm pretty sure they're not wild about Abyssals and making Shadowlands and killing lots of people. Weren't we talking about like 900 people died? Now there's an error message on the loom that the error message from the Sidereals episode was caused by an Abyssal, and that's why they don't like them.
Abyssals cause a lot of error messages.
And I mean, Abyssals specifically cannot be seen by the loom of creation, right? Or is it only they can only be seen when they're doing something in creation?
I don't think they're explicitly outside of fate anymore.
Yeah, they're not outside of fate, but as one of the exalted, they have the power to change their fate, so.
And also, if they fuck off into the underworld, you can no longer be tracked by creation's reality engine.
Yep.
And then you have to use the other rendering engine, the calendar of Satesh, or whatever the heck it's called.
You are absolutely correct.
I find those things endlessly fascinating. Sorry.
So for listeners, the calendar of Satesh is the calendar of the underworld, which also operates as the underworld's stars that lets time progress in the underworld.
And is kind of the underworld analog to the loom of creation. But since everything in the underworld seemingly is somewhat infused with essence, it is much less rigorous than the loom, which can literally dictate the entirety of a mortal's life from birth till death, I think.
Indeed.
Okay. So who are their allies?
Naturally, they can call on the dead, whether agents of the Death Lords or undead hordes that they have created, or necromantic horrors, or just ghosts, because they can see and interact with and command them.
Yeah, you might also have Abyssals teaming up with each other. Chance has very cleverly written here, the enemy of their enemy. So you have a lot of instances where like an Abyssal will team up with someone they don't particularly want to work with because they're fighting something worse. And that does make for some pretty interesting stories. This can also often include Lunars because the Lunar bond was with Solar Exaltations and those got stolen and turned into Abyssals. So you could be the Lunar who pulled the unlucky straw and your soul bonded mate is now working for the Deathlords. Which, you know, if your goal is to tear down the realm, y'all might be working together. And there's also all sorts of interesting stories about bonding with this mate and the corruption of your essence and the maybe like an enemies to lovers story or whatever sort of melodrama you want to find there.
Yeah, kind of on the melodrama spectrum, you also have stories of redemption. There is a path, and in previous editions, there's been a mechanical option for Abyssals to become Solars once again, to cast off their corruption and purify their essence. And so if you are an Abyssal who's on that path, really anyone can become an ally on the path to redemption. There's a lot of range.
Yeah. Are there any well-known or signature Abyssals?
There are a bunch. Thank you for asking. I'll start at the top with the seven-degreed physician of the Black Maladies, who has been a signature Abyssal of the Abyssal Circle, their Daybreak, for two editions. I don't know if he's going to appear as the sixth Daybreak in third edition, but I kind of hope he does because he's great.
I suspect not, since all of the other signature characters have changed, but I suspect he will appear in art.
I hope so. And probably in a piece of fiction, too. I particularly like him because he has a metal as hell name. He's one of the Abyssals who's not hot. He's not conventionally attractive. And he has an absolutely amazing piece of fiction in the third edition core book where, like, he's just finished making a terrible necromantic horror and is smoking a cigarette.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, it's pretty funny. My favorite of the signature Abyssal circle is the Maiden of the Mirthless Smile. She is the Dusk cast. And I really don't know much about her story, but she looks badass. So that is why she is my favorite of the signatures.
She does look cool, and she has some really terrible dialogue in a lot of the second edition comics, but that's a lot of people. I'm not going to hold that against her.
Yeah.
I also particularly like the Prince of Shadows, who is a character who pops up in fiction a whole lot. He's sort of like a Seven Devils Clever, where like he's a character who's mostly in fiction and has never appeared like as a... I don't know, he might have an antagonist entry in one of the books,
In the Scroll of Exalts, yes. I was just looking to it in preparation for this episode.
I don't actually remember what his story is. I think he's one of the lovers, so he is also a fuck epistle. But his whole thing is that he's sort of quintessentially dark and beautiful and a Bishonen goth boy, and what's not to love about that?
My next choice, now that we're getting outside of the signature character's range, is Weeping Righten Cast Aside, a Moonshadow cast abyssal who acts as the voice of Neverborn and who spreads the gospel of Oblivion. The Deathlords kind of fear her, both for her quick rise to power and for her seeming independence from the Deathlords. Also, she wears a cool-as-hell Plague Doctor mask.
Which brings us to probably my absolute favorite abyssal that has ever appeared in canon text. I would not call this character well-known at all, because I may be the only person who remembers he exists, and this is Waters the Fields with Blood, who is the renegade abyssal from the Call of the Illuminated, whose whole thing is that they stole him. Like, he got exalted, and they based the Call of the Illuminated, which was at least the gold faction's, like, support group for Solars, stole him, and then they were like, this is ours, and they have done nothing to soothe his deathly nature. He's gotta live like a regular human, and he's just ruining everything with all the resonance he has racked up, and nobody really knows what to do with that, and he's just trying his best, but is kind of a disaster, and that's why he's my favorite.
Well, I wish we could end on that note, but I have one more to talk about here. Typhon, the Wink in the Storm's Eye, who is the Mask of Winter's diplomat to the Confederation of Rivers. As a diplomat, you'd expect him to be a Moonshadow cast, but no, he is a day cast. He is an assassin, which kind of gives you an idea of what the Mask of Winters thinks about diplomacy. He is there more to sow confusion and discord than he is to make friends.
I like the contrast between this and the Sidereals episode, where for Sidereals, like, no one could literally remember any Sidereals, any of the
signature. Well, they're Sidereals. What do you expect?
Exactly. And this one, it's just you two being like, no, I go next. No, I go next. I have a cool Death Lord. No, I have one too. The original version was like 17 things long, and we had to cut it down or something like that. So who should play an Abyssal?
Well, the Abyssals are great for stories about revenge. I think that's a good place to start if you want to make an Abyssal who isn't straight up bad guy. Stories of just revenge through dark means are interesting ones.
There is also, of course, the macabre aesthetic. So if you are a goth and you like goth things, this will appeal to you. You want to put skulls on everything? Play an Abyssal.
That was definitely some of the draw of the Abyssals when I first discovered them back in high school. There's also a really interesting, when we mentioned it before when talking about allies, story option of seeking redemption. And for Abyssals, this has to come with some metaphysical weight as well, because they have been corrupted by an outside force. And so I think there's definitely some cool story arcs to tell there.
We don't have anything more in this category. I was going to say something else, and I was like, no, I think we got it.
There is kind of one more angle, which is sometimes it is just fun to be the baddies.
Sometimes it is just fun to play a villain.
And Abyssals gives you a framework for play. So we hear about the quintessential evil game where everything goes terribly awry because everyone's backstabbing each other. Well, you can play the evil game in Abyssals and actually work together because you're all working towards the same evil goals. And so you can have a really interesting campaign of, like, tearing down and corrupting an area and dragging it into the underworld and all of these things, being driven by these ghostly overlords, and, like, also have some really interesting interpersonal stuff of how does being dead affect the stuff from life. I think if you want to play a villain's game, Abyssals is one good place to do it.
Yeah, definitely.
I've run that game. It was fun.
What are some cool-ass things you can do with a starting Abyssal character?
Well, I've got one here, and originally I had a combat charm, but I was like, you know what? No, let me jump outside the combat charm areas. Life-Mocking Assembly is an Essence 3 charm in 2nd edition that lets you reanimate a corpse.
I'll be basic. You can also make a sword out of hardened shadow, and that's rad as fuck.
This is true. While we're talking about Abyssal swords for a second, let's talk about Soulsteel.
Talk about Soulsteel.
Yeah, we've talked about the magical materials previously being 5 or more magical materials that are used to make the Exalted's weapons. And the Abyssal magical material is Soulsteel, which is underworld iron that has been infused with the souls of the dead who are forever locked in torment. And there's ghastly faces that appear in the black metal of the artifacts, and it's metal as hell.
It's sometimes it screams, there's ghost faces, it's black, all your shit's made out of it. It's so goofy.
Do you want to talk about necrotech at all? That's another term I ran into, but I don't know if that's anything of note.
That was really a big second edition thing, okay. Which was big on having blank tech everything.
Got it.
Yeah, I think for the purposes of third edition, you could really think about necrotech as any weird crap that you build by animating things through necromancy. So there will probably be some aspect of, hey, you can make monsters out of other things, and that there'll be some mix of reanimated flesh and other things that you have built, again, because that is right on the nose for abyssals, but it probably won't be called necrotech anymore.
Yeah, I would not expect that term to return. I would expect that maybe we'll see a Bone Strider come back, but without the stupid name.
I don't know, Bone Strider's kind of neat.
Okay. As neat as anything else is.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like a way of calling someone promiscuous.
I mean, like, the idea of, like, making a war strider out of a giant skeleton and then animating it with necromancy is cool as hell, but I don't necessarily know that it needs a stupid name.
So what is an abyssal concept you want to or have played?
If someone was like, we're going to play an abyssals game, and I was like, all right, I'll play an abyssal, I think I would really want to build a concept that had to do with, like, plotting the long game of getting rid of my Death Lord. And probably in play, I would decide whether or not that goal was to the end of, like, they're bad and we should get rid of them, or they're bad and I should replace them.
Which way are they bad?
Which way are they bad? Yeah.
That sounds pretty awesome, actually. So prior to this last weekend at Gen Con, where I got to play Exalted, and it was awesome, the only Exalted character I ever actually got to play was an Abyssal, who was hellbent on revenge against the realm for the death of his family and his lover, and that was his whole thing. He was hellbent on revenge. And when I ran an Abyssals game, there were a lot of characters who were also hellbent on revenge. And one of the really interesting things that happened in that game was those characters got their revenge and, like, didn't know what was next, didn't know what it meant anymore to be an Abyssal, because for some of them, their revenge rang hollow. And so I like the idea of playing an Abyssal who's in that post-revenge stage where they died, the Death Lord's like, hey, I can give you lots of power and you'll be able to get revenge. And they're like, fuck yeah. And they go and murder some folk. And then they're like, well, that didn't quite give me the satisfaction I wanted. And now I need to figure out what's next. And I think that would be an interesting place to start the character.
Huh.
What about you, Terry? Do you have any ideas for what you would want to do with an Abyssal?
I like the one thing that seems to be introduced, at least that I saw in 3E, was kind of the romance of the grave, that there is kind of this weird shadow alternative to creation, where death is not necessarily this waypoint on the way to rebirth, but it's just a place you can live. And it's one of those things we can just get rid of suffering and replace it with this kind of perpetual semi-stasis if we all embrace oblivion, and someone who is essentially a prophet of that, who may or may not like the Death Lords, in the sense that, so just kind of putting this aside, the Abyssals are one of the areas where I see the most ties between this game and World of Darkness, and the relationship between, and the fact that there's this place called a Stygia, and that there is this Well of the Void or Oblivion kind of hanging out there someplace, and that there is this malevolent force that wants to see the downfall of all creation, but also it is something that gives people power. So to me, the idea of having a character that wants to give everyone the ability to have access to the power in embracing Oblivion is probably a direction I would want to go. Probably one of those people that other Death Lords or other Abyssals are like, no, he's the crazy one. And yeah, that would be nice.
Cool.
Does that sound cool?
Anything else about the Abyssals?
I am really excited to see how they turn out in third edition.
Yeah, same.
But yeah, it seems like an interesting design space, because, like, you don't want them to just be the dark reflections of the solar. That seems like something you could accomplish in a pamphlet.
Yeah, second edition definitely had that problem of you look through the Abyssal Charm chapter and it was like, just go look at the solar version of this charm, but evil.
Add the word blood to the front of it.
Darkness, iron, bone, ebony.
Naming Abyssal Charms is fun, though.
Yeah. We should make a random Abyssal Charm name generator like doing that. And with that, let's roll out. Monica, if we want to hear about your work outside of this, where can we do that?
You can go listen to me and my co-host talk entertainingly about all things game design, running, writing, designing games at Bonus Experience, which you can follow on Twitter at BonusExpCast, or go to bxpcast.com, which Ray informs me is updated now.
Exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. And if you want to follow me on the internets, I'm at Zenith Sun.
How about you, Chaz?
To follow me on the internets, I am at Storytold Chaz, and you can also find me on the Storytold podcast, where we have started once again airing the Fall of Giara actual play for Dragonblooded. It's pretty awesome, and I'm excited to be back on the air with it.
I'm pretty jazzed, too. And if you'd like to hear about Mage the Ascension and other World of Darkness-y things, join us, magethepodcast.com. I'm at Terry Robinson on the Twitters. Stay classy, everyone.
Pizza strong.
Well, I'm fine with that.
Horse strong.
Exactly. Okay, there we go.
Thank you for listening to Systematic Understanding of Everything, an Exalted podcast. Go to exaltcast.com to subscribe, see our show notes, or listen to our past episodes. We're available on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and Anchor.fm. If you have a question, shoot us an email at questions@exaltcast.com. If you'd like to support our show, please consider using the affiliate links in our show notes to make purchases on DriveThruRPG and thestorytellervault.com. The opening theme is Return of the Solar Exalted, and the closing theme is the Sidereal Exalted Lesser But Safe from Fanfare for the Chosen by James Semple and is used with permission. In the meantime, exalt strong.